Chapter 33. 2 days had passed since the man jumped from the library tower. There had been no mention of the incident in the papers, despite the number of eyewitnesses. Owen Drake's name was conspicuously absent from the obituaries list, too. Michael had tried calling the registrar's office, but they insisted they had no record of Mr. Drake's ever having lived. So Michael called the land registry, then the sanitation department, then all the dentists in town, desperately trying to find some trace of the old man. It was like his entire existence had vanished from the city's records overnight. Disembarking the tram, Michael approached the hospital and surveyed the directory. Intensive care seemed most likely for a man who'd fallen 20 stories, so Michael set off. He hung back as the elevator emptied around him, watching the ward receptionist check other guests upon entry. Michael approached, smiling politely at the man behind the counter.
"Good afternoon. I'm here to visit my grandfather," said Michael.
"Certainly, sir. What's his name?"
"Owen Drakes," said Michael.
The clerk frowned, rifling through a list of patients.
"No one by that name, sir. Are you sure he's on this ward?"
"I think so. He had a bad fall, like really bad," said Michael.
A glimmer of suspicion flashed across the clerk's face.
Let me inquire further, sir. Perhaps I can track him down for you."
The clerk picked up the phone and dialed a short internal number.
"Hello? 316? I've got a gentleman here making inquiries about a recent fall victim. He says he's looking for his grandfather. No record of the name. Could you send someone? Thank you."
The clerk hung up and gave Michael the warmest smile imaginable.
"If you could just take a seat on the waiting bench there, sir, one of my colleagues will be with you shortly."
"Oh, which colleague?" said Michael uneasily.
"Just take a seat, sir. It's no problem,"
said the clerk, a little flustered. Michael glanced around. The other ward staff were looking at him warily.
"I think I must have made a mistake. He must be at a different hospital. Thanks," blurted Michael.
The clerk called after him, urging him to stay. Michael bolted for the elevator, then realized what a foolish move that would be. As the doors chimed open, he darted into the stairwell and pressed himself flush against the wall. Peering through the window space, he watched a security automaton glide out of the elevator towards the intensive care unit. Michael hurried down to the main concourse and entered the gift shop. He bought a bouquet of flowers and penned a hasty "Get Well Soon" card at the checkout. With his cover embellished, he set up camp in the corner of the food court waiting. After 30 minutes, the clerk from the intensive care unit entered the food court with a colleague. As the pair joined the line for hot food, Michael took his chance and returned to the stairs. He deliberately overshot by a level and entered a random psychiatric ward. There he made inquiries about his fictitious grandfather using a thin cover story about a hip replacement. The clerk redirected him to the prosthetics wing, as expected. Michael lingered, extending his gratitude until the timing was perfect. As he made to leave, he deliberately tripped, bumping into a psychiatric patient being transferred. This in turn caused the patient and their carer to collide with another resident. A row quickly erupted, triggering a tidal wave of discord across the ward. The ruckus snowballed as other patients and staff became embroiled. As the clerk dialed security for urgent assistance, Michael slipped away. With security occupied upstairs, he approached the intensive care ward once again. The clerk from before was still away on lunch. Michael peered through the window and scanned the list of names on the board, selecting one that sounded old.
"Hello, I'm here to visit Mr. Eckstein," said Michael,
hoping the gifts would assuage any further questions.
"Certainly, sir. You'll just need to sign in right here,"
said the new clerk, sliding over a clipboard. Michael hastily scribbled a false name, then put "nephew" under the relation field. He slid the form back and set off towards the random unit slowly. He peered into each room as he went, observing patients in various states of trauma and respiratory support. He spotted Mr. Eckstein, a surprisingly youthful man, asleep, with layers of bandaging around a severe leg burn. Michael glanced back. The clerk was busy with paperwork. He hurried down the corridor until he reached an unmarked room. On the patient name sign, it merely read, "Ministry Aware." A life support machine whirred beside the bed, while yards of cable extended from the man's nose and wrists into various intravenous drips. The patient himself was in a full body cast, and under so many layers of bandage, Michael could barely recognize him. As Michael slipped inside, the only clue as to the identity of the human beneath the reams of plaster was the pile of bloodied clothes in the corner. Michael lay the flowers and card on the side table and stared at the unconscious old man. The notes at the end of the bed said he was in a coma, but would likely have catastrophic brain damage should he regain consciousness at all. Paralysis was also expected.
This wasn't what he'd chosen. Michael approached the breathing machine by the old man's head and watched the pump wheeze up and down through its glass tube. Kneeling down, he unplugged the machine. It let out the last of its air with a depressurizing hiss. As the old man's lungs gurgled, the heart monitor flatlined. Michael hastily turned the machine off, silencing the alarm, then made a beeline for the exit.
"Just a short visit today, sir?"
asked the clerk. Yes, thank you, said Michael.
"Just a sec. I need you to sign out, please."
A nurse was approaching the old man's room. Michael hastily signed out the wrong name, then flung the clipboard back and sped into the corridor. Cries of "Call a code!" echoed behind him. Michael mashed the elevator button as the commotion escalated. The doors chimed open, and the previous clerk stepped out with a colleague. Michael dipped his head and brushed by, hitting the down button. As the doors slid shut, the original clerk recognized his face. "Stop that man!" The two terrified civilians in the lift gave Michael a wide berth as the elevator descended. All of a sudden, it ground to a halt in between levels. He forced the doors apart and peered into the upper level. A security automaton was gliding towards them from the far end. Stooping down, Michael decided to take his chances on the level below. He swiveled out underneath the midway ceiling and dropped. Barging medics aside, he raced down the adjacent staircase to the food court. By now, it was teeming with people. He fought his way across, nearing the main atrium, but security staff were sealing off the exits. Michael darted sideways through a porter's door. He stumbled into a long service corridor full of stock for the hospital's eateries. "No civilians back here!" cried a porter. Michael leaped over a stack of crates and burst through the fire exit, sprinting for the tram stop as the hospital pre-alarm rang out.
"Do you know why I've called you in?" said Michael's boss sternly.
Michael shook his head, wondering if it was something to do with the 2-hour lunch break he just took. His eyes fell on a brown box on his boss's desk.
"Recognize these?" yelled the man.
He slammed a wad of papers down before Michael. It was a breakdown of all the building's phone calls from the last 12 months. Several rows were highlighted, increasing in frequency towards the present month.
"Explain," fumed the boss.
"It looks like a phone log," shrugged Michael.
"Drop the attitude. Right now, I'm deciding whether to simply fire you or press charges with it."
Michael sat up, nervously. "I don't understand. What's going on?" he said unconvincingly.
"Oh, please. Every time you're in my office, you drop engineering suggestions about bridge design and structural load bearing. Yet now you're pretending you can't fathom a simple list of phone numbers. I don't buy it for a second. You know exactly what this is. We've been through this list with a fine-tooth comb and cross-referenced it with the city directory. None of these numbers are clients, or even prospective clients. They're private citizens, many of them dead. All of these calls were made from your desk during your shifts. Take this number, for instance. You called this person 9 times in 2 days. What the hell's going on? Is this some kind of corporate espionage?"
"I don't know what to say," mumbled Michael.
"You'd better think of something, or I'm calling the police," he said, snatching up the phone.
"Okay, I admit it was me," blurted Michael. His heart raced as his mind frantically tried to plot a course through the danger. If his boss called the police now, there would be all kinds of questions, including where he'd been that morning. If they traced him to the hospital and what he did to the old man, unsanctioned phone calls would be...